you for coming this late to the burn, or before the burn, for this last talk in the Blinking Arcade Lecture Series. And I really appreciate it. Last year we held this series in honor of Terence McKenna. How many of you know who Terence McKenna is and heard his work? Terence was an amazing person. He was a bardic individual who, in a sense, kind of, he was what you, I guess you would call a psilocybinaut, traveling to spaces that and able to come back and describe them. And that's kind of a unique, to describe them in a way that you are enveloped by the description. And doing it in a kind of a neutral way. And Terence, we did a project with Terence at his house in South Dakota in 1999 in February, bringing him into virtual worlds, because he'd never really experienced them. We actually created a psychedelic virtual world, and people came in online, and we were on a satellite dish in his house and generated it. And at one point, there were crowds of avatars or players, people coming into this world for a discussion, a talk that Terence gave. And he said, usually, you know how Terence talks, normally I get on jumbo jets and travel for 6 hours to talk to groups of 30 people, and I can stay right at home. So he was pretty thrilled with that. On that trip, which is around March or April 99, he confessed to us that, myself and the person who was with me, that he was having very strange dreams. Very, very strange things that he couldn't explain. And for a man like that not to be able to explain what was coming in was pretty profound. And in early May, he was diagnosed with a very large brain tumor. In July or June, when he had the scan, only Terence would fully appreciate the magnitude of this. The doctors came in and said, Terence, only you will fully appreciate the magnitude of this, but the tumor is shaped perfectly like a mushroom. So we held a special event for him in September 99, because we knew he didn't have long to live. He already looked pretty terrible in 98 when he was in Santa Cruz, where we're from. And at one point, we're in a room like this in Kona. All of us, it was called Alchemical Arts. I don't know if anybody at that conference at that event. It was the last event with Terence. Terence normally had a big event called Palenque in Mexico, and that's what this talk is named after in honor of. But there wasn't going to be another Palenque with Terence McKenna, it was clear. So we actually, at the very end of this conference, Terence actually laid down on the floor. It was just very touching. Christy lay with him. We all lay, and we actually lay with our heads, picture them right here, and with our heads pointing inward at them. And we all visioned whatever it was we were to vision, whether it's to heal the man or to send him off in a great way. And what came to my mind, actually, pretty much in a waking state, was this. I told him later, and he thought, that's appropriate. was this crystalline, polygonal, shining vehicle. It was shaped like a Fabergé egg, his famous quotation of the dancing Fabergé eggs, that carried him up and carried him. That was what was going to carry him away. And we kind of joked that it was the getaway car for Terence McKenna. But one of the things that happened to Terence, which was pretty profound, as his mind basically dissolved. I mean, the tumor was huge. And that kind of tumor basically pulls everything in. You get storms called seizures, grand mal seizures, things like that, because it's kind of consuming the mind, consuming the physical brain. And when he was in his bed in Marin County, where he died in February of 2000, he made it to the twos. He wanted to make it to 2012 for reasons that you probably might know. But he kind of, one night, he was always surrounded by people. He kind of sat up in bed and said, it's all about love. And now, for most of us, that's sort of a, of course it's all about love, but for Terence, Terence is a guy of the frontal lobes. He's a guy that is like words. He's a wordsmith. Just putting it all together, ideas and visualizing things and whatnot. And he confessed to me, it's previous years is I'm not a love bug. You know? But at the end of his life, suddenly, in a sense, the dissolving of the self, the dissolving of the mental space that was so powerful in this man, the love came in. And he said, the whole psychedelic movement is about love and opening the channel to love. It's not about anything else. That's the real purpose of it. And then his last words before he died were, people keep breathing. Just keep breathing. So yeah, it was a pretty big experience for a lot of us to lose somebody like this. But what I wanted to, what it led me on a kind of a course through that and various experiences that, what is love? Or what is, when Terrence describes dancing Fabergé eggs, you know, you think, how could this be, have been painted in this man's mind? How could the, there's no computer, 3D computer software renderer that could make something so fanciful and incredible. It comes into the mind. Is it some kind of random recombination of brain cells that somehow randomly produces a beautiful, consistent scene of dancing Fabergé eggs in a crystal world? Or is it, where does this stuff come from? And where does the powerful feeling of love that finally kind of, in a sense, push its way into Terrence's consciousness come from? Is it something that we make? Or is it something that comes from the ether, from the bigger universe? And I started to, I'm like, in Terrence, I'm kind of a too much of a frontal cortex guy. You know, I'm going to tell you about all that. Which is why I come to Burning Man. But one of the things that I started to put together over the last year based on that experience was, where does this stuff all come from? And if this stuff is coming from within us, we're pretty incredible beings, you have to admit, right? If we can generate all this stuff and we're just a bunch of glial cells all put together. But what if the stuff is coming from a sort of bigger carrier wave on the outside? Where's the source of it? Because the source of it, now you could call it God, whatever you want to call it, is pretty together. It can generate great movies and great special effects and profoundly moving things. And the sense of power of love is so powerful. You look at someone like Jesus Christ, who probably was one of history's great open valves to this thing. I mean, this guy was born, maybe with the help of Mary Magdalene and others, this pipe, and it's like a fire hose of this guy who was shooting this stuff. I mean, he was describing his life in the Gnostic Hostels as the ultimate is a radiant being that you could hardly even be in the presence of. So this guy somehow got born cursed with a direct pipe. And maybe we all kind of get it here and it comes through in cracks, and we get hit on the head of the frying pan and it comes through, or we go on a trip and it comes through and it comes through. The question is, where does it come from? Well, being the space case that I am, I'm involved, I do work for NASA, so space software stuff. I've been studying the cosmology. The field of cosmology is undergoing a profound revolution in the last 6 or 7 years, even. About the understanding of the sort of totality of the universe, what the universe is, where it came from, where it's going. I mean, it's incredible what we're seeing. And then what I want to share with you is, I want to describe to you, and I hope you can follow me with this, because at least some good is at the end, is that the universe is a... if you understand what has been discovered or postulated, some of this stuff is not really verified, it's just sort of put together by people in the field. The properties of the universe, and you add up all these properties, and you add up where the universe is potentially going, the universe has a life cycle like you and I. It's a birth of a life and a death. And you put yourself way out into the time of the death of the universe, and you postulate what could be happening then. It can answer the question of where this might be coming from. So follow me. Okay, the universe seems to be this thing that started in, you know, there's lots of debates of whether there was a Big Bang, but it seems to be pretty arguable that it started as a Big Bang, as a wiggle, as a random quantum fluctuation, from which unraveled the whole universe. Arnold Guth at MIT has postulated and shown that if you could add up all the numbers in the way that he's shown it, all the energy and antimatter and matter, whatever, if you add that all up, it's a zero, big zero. The whole net thing is zero. So everything in the universe is about change and difference. And the space keeps things separated, keeps the universe existing. If the universe wasn't a little dot, it would just poof, go out of existence. So atom to zero because it started from zero. It was a random fluctuation. Another property, which is pretty weird, they launched a satellite called Kobe a few years ago. In 2001, they launched one called Wilkos and Map. Nothing to do with map here, but maybe it is. And this, they have produced this ball. In fact, if you go to Bach Globule, just past Berkeley, the man, there's this gold dome. And in there, Carter Emmert from the Rose Center Planetarium in New York City, a real planetarium guy, is doing tours of the universe. And what he ends the tour with is showing this fantastic multicolored globe. That's the WMAP globe of the background, cosmic background radiation. It's all weird color energy. What that is the echo from the Big Bang. What the other properties of the universe is it contains everything, including all its past history. So the universe doesn't lose information. It contains all information about anything that's ever happened. So when you look into the night sky, you're looking deep into the past. Another property, which is interesting, is the property of voice. A friend of ours who's involved in a project called Biota was the first researcher to use an embryologist. And when you were a blastula of 4, 8, 16, 32, cells in a ball, at a certain point, your body was, or yourself, was, these are all undifferentiated, the same cells, it's this blob. How does this blob become you? He's the first guy to observe that in this blob were all kinds of sound waves traveling back, very complex sound waves that seemed to, and wrote a volume this big, embryological research on this. And so, is it that sound is the primary carrier of information? Well, yes, in the early universe, as the universe is expanding and you get protons and neutrons forming and you get basically a gas bubble, that first universe was a giant soundscape. In fact, it was a big voice. And all the structure that you see in filaments of galaxies, 100,000 galaxies, great walls of sheets, were formed in this giant, in a huge sound space that went quiet about 300,000 years after the Big Bang. So we live in a sound-born, sound-created, voice-created existence. And even our own embryos, the sound was there, the voice was there, the baby cries, in the beginning there was the word. So it's kind of, that's another property. Another odd property is that, did you know that in your brain, inside your brain, if you add up all the connections of possible pathways through your brain, and all do all the numbers, it's bigger than all the particles in the universe. It's bigger. So that's all the quantum particles, everything, because of math. So your brain is a thing that has been evolved by the universe that is so big that it can contain the information about the universe, the whole universe. And maybe the history too, because the numbers are really big. Now, your brain probably burned out if the universe tried to download itself. it would be like Johnny Mnemonic, blow up. This is Brain Camp after all, so we should be talking about brains. Now, so here's all these properties. Now, why is the universe even around? Is it just this, stars, they form, there's this whole life cycles of galaxies. Why the heck did this thing even come into existence? Is it, if it was a random quantum fluctuation, there may have been this uber universe, it was a beautiful quantum field that had no problems, just went on and on, and then some day it had a problem, it was just one little wiggle, made this universe big, drawn all this trash, created whatever, and this quantum field is going to just, eventually it's going to evaporate that and get back to the quantum field. So is the universe a one-off thing that happened? It's going to get cleaned up by some vacuum cleaning system? Or was it born for a purpose? Is it a one-shot thing? Well, consider this. Let's put ourselves out into the future. What if the universe, there's one model that says the universe is expanding ever faster. What happens? The rate of expansion is going faster and faster and faster. what happens when that occurs is that, you know, hundreds of billions of years in the future, all the galaxies are separated by such a distance that you can't even see anything. And the stars, basically everything will end up going at the speed of light and evaporating. There will be no matter. Just this whole thing will just be this huge smear going at the speed of light and basically won't exist. So that's one death for the universe. The other death is pretty obvious. If there's enough juice and gumption to get the universe to come back, to collapse down, it will come very rapidly, and its end of the life will come down to a point and simply cease to exist. So it seems like that its movement, it's not in stasis, so it's either moving outward or inward. What if the purpose of this universe is sort of this universe that doesn't know itself, but it has enough complexity in itself that there's some kind of, in a sense, desire by the universe to create a knowing of itself while it's around, while before it's evaporated or collapsed? Well, what if consciousness, what if complexity in life is this attempt at the universe to create self-organization? As we talk about, you know, things go to chaos and you throw something on the burn, it's gone, it's all chaos. Well, life is the only known principle that can organize against the chaos. It can actually create order in the face of all this chaos. Itself. Life kind of crystallizes structure. I was in a mine in South Africa. I'll do a little diversion to show you how incredibly robust life is. I was in this mine in South Africa about 700-800 feet down, a gold mine. In South Africans are not, they don't care about risk, so they'll do anything to scare tourists. Someone pick up a steam hammer or whatever, the jackhammer, let's, you know, hammer away. And they're hammering away at the side of this tunnel, which is a gold mine tunnel, and beams are quaking, and I'm like, I'm gonna die. You know, and the guys are saying, look at this chunk of gold, you know, and it was laid down 2 billion years ago when there was no oxygen in the atmosphere, and there was no life on land. And it's alluvial gold, and, you know, it's gold reef, it's called. And for a minute there, I had this idea that this whole thing could come crushing down and crush my body, and I'd be out of existence. However, the DNA in your body is older than the continents. It's older than the configuration of the continents. It is the information that was coded and passed on time and time and time again is older than most stars live, a lot in most cases. It's older than the content of the atmosphere changing. So those little single-cell things have been around for billions of years, faithfully copying the sequence and not making errors. That's the most persistent, robust process probably that's ever been created in the universe, that power. So why is the universe doing this? Well, consider, what if there is some kind of sense that the universe has of self-preservation? You're an organism, you're trying to be self-preservation. But the universe is just a bunch of scattered parts. It's like, in a sense, a person who goes into a coma. When you go into a coma with bad head injury or something, when you come out of this happened to Chris Langton, who created the artificial life field after this occurred to him, you come back and you reemerge. This may have happened to you in your life. You're completely unconscious. You have nothing going. And really, your brain is shut down. It's getting oxygen, but it's shut down. And you actually sense. Now Chris told me, he said, I don't know how this happened, but I could sense my person and my mind rebooting bit by bit, week by week. I could feel myself rebooting. And I said to Chris, what was the feeling that was feeling the self-rebooting? Is that outside yourself? How can you feel yourself rebooting if you're rebooting? Did you load some earlier code and define yourself? And then, so it's a really strange thing. So it's the universe. Is it booting itself up into a conscious state? Is the universe therefore trying to do something called self-preservation because it knows it has an end? So consider, say the universe's end is the collapse. You know, because the other one is well, the Big Bang, Big Collapse is sort of the more attractive model we have for this. Maybe there's enough dark matter to make happen. So conceive of the following, that as the universe is getting denser and denser, things are getting closer and closer in. Did you see this happen in galaxies and black holes? Things collapse and they go into these black holes and they disappear forever. But before that, there's sort of this dense packing of material. What if by that time, and that might be 20 billion years from now, there's a lot of conscious entities in that cloud, and this is brilliant bright cloud, and it's the end days of the universe, and those conscious entities are in there and they're starting to communicate. Maybe they were communicating before, maybe they were at war with one another, maybe they didn't understand the cultures. But why are they communicating now? Because the game's almost over. What they're doing is changing as rapidly as possible matter and energy into conscious structure as fast as they can, because they've decided the greatest engineering project is to try to save their entire existence from ultimate collapse. And so they're in this giant engineering project. Budgets are no object. They're doing it, and they've resolved all those issues of competition, and they are working together as a team. And you know what happens when you work together as a team? You get incredible things done, but there's always, between one individual being and the other, there's always a fight over that. But when you get over that, you work together, it's fantastic. So this ball, this brilliant ball, is coalescing down. Now, how on earth do the engineers create the conditions for survival of the universe? There's only one way. They have to create a single conscious being out of the universe, because that being is the only thing that can move the entire mass that remaining in the remaining time. It can do the reasoning to figure out how to survive. So as this ball is collapsing, there's an ignition that happens. It's an ignition of consciousness all around the ball as this great event happens, a birth event. And at basically, I think that it would happen when the universe is so small it's back to a gas. So there's a great sonic voice, there's a great scream, because that's where the universe started. And that sonic voice is so much information so quickly that that entire consciousness can be created out of one voice. So the consciousness is created. It's a baby. It's a baby. It's shouting. It's happy. And as any of you know who've had kids, all babies think they're the entire universe anyway. So it's really blissful. It's born. One problem. It doesn't know where it comes from. And all of the information about what it's supposed to be doing isn't passed to it. The risk that the universe maker, the universe birthers take is that this baby it can't pass a message on, because the baby isn't the entire thing. The baby has to deduce the message for itself. So it's happily doing, it's getting even cozier and cozier because it's getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. It can look back, because of the property that the universe never loses information, it can look back in itself and see all the history of everything, all the civilizations, the planets, and its own birth. It can read that history, it can kind of scan that history and put it together. Where did I come from? Once it gets over the, I'm so happy I'm everything, and feed me, or it's already got enough because it has everything. So it's feeding itself somehow, but it's feeding itself on knowledge about where did I come from. And the where did I come from is interesting. Where are my parents? Well, the parents are the entire histories of everything. And if it's a smart kid, it will deduce quickly, I was created for a purpose. Now, what is my purpose? These are the basic questions you have in life. My purpose is that I was created to save everything that I see, all this history, all the ancestors. Everything that was made is has to be saved. Or I just say, screw it, I had a good time. Let's all, we're going down the tubes. No, but I believe that the choice that the universe would make at that point would be save everything. I have to save. I'm going to self-preserve, but I'm saving everything that was. And it will have to work out how to do that. How to do that, because of the basic laws of physics, would be that it's a collapsing ball, right? When it collapses, the only way to keep one ball from collapsing is to start to turn. And you start to turn the whole body of the universe. This baby is turning the entire body of the universe, rotating faster and faster and faster and faster. Because it has the power to do that. It has everything. It has all the energy of any stars ever exist. It's got lots of juice. So it's turning and rotating as quickly as it can. What happens? You get a mitosis. You'll get like cells breaking in two as the universe cuts itself in two. In space, all the matter and energy, magister, fought off two universes. And it's actually divine, it's created a division in order to stop the ultimate collapse of the single ball. Now these two things are now rotating around each other. because that's the, they've given themselves temporary life, they also have to divide and divide again and divide again. And so that there's now a colony that no one piece is big enough to destroy a significant part of the universe. So what has this being done? This being has had to make the ultimate sacrifice that after all this effort to create the oneness that we all want, you know, we want to be in that oneness too, it's had to divide itself and create the community again and be alone. And that those elements are alone, and yet they're connected. So the universe has gone from into this new phase of a society. And where it goes from there, who would know? Where, and now come back to the original question. That the property of the universe, even now in string theory, which is kind of hard to understand and hard to understand myself, that not only is all information is not is preserved by the universe, but in fact, stuff that's happening way out, as you think, in the future is actually already occurring simultaneously now. It's occurring now. So there isn't this linear timeline that human beings live in. It's kind of a vestige. It's kind of an artifact. It's not actually real. And if any of you sort of had these flashbacks or flash forwards along that timeline, and they'd be showing you that. And in fact, stuff you think is going to happen and it does, well, because it is happening. It's just we don't live in a space that where we can see it all. But this, the universe can. So could it be, and this is the thesis, and you can sense it in yourself, that every time you have a trip or you have an overwhelming feeling of love that comes from outside that is so powerful that it moves you, you're actually opening a little crack to the time that is happening now of that baby that is discovered and created through basically love in societies that made it, the ultimately most powerful love, which is the earth. Creating of a new being is the ultimate in love. And that pulse and that existence of that baby in birth is echoing back all over the place, coming through little cracks in the concrete. And that you can tie into that. And that indeed, you're not just a receiver of that information. You are helping that process. That baby's looking back. Can you imagine being that one being that realizing that it's doomed, looking back and seeking for answers? What is it looking for? It's looking for comfort and support. This may sound sort of strange, but it's looking for anything that understands me, anything that understands me. So it is made of love. If it looks back, the only way that it can get the energy to carry out this preservation, this idea, is if it finds a human being here and here, finds a being on another planet that is open to it and taps into it. I understand you, the universal powerful love. Now, that's just something to consider. So I think I'll leave it there. Does anyone have any questions?
So the love exists already there all the time, and it's just a matter of opening our channel to receive back the existence of the love that's already present.
It's present, and it's a very big channel. Now, your brain, the fact that your brain is so complex that it can contain the whole universe, means your brain's an imaging device. So when your brain is open, it doesn't have to be using substances, it can just be in your normal life of being open. Your brain is basically a camera obscura for the whole universe. So if you're open and let it, the universe is going to send that imagery in a sense. Or you're going to be able to tap into all the echoes, all that activity. So when you're seeing dancing Faber's eggs, if you see them, that's coming from this ether of maybe there are dancing Faber's eggs somewhere. And maybe the single mind state of the universe at the end of time, the end of the first generation, is cognizant of that and is thinking about that. And that your little brain out here, being open, manages to catch a piece of that. The dancing Faberge eggs that existed once, that somehow are also trying to help, or being called in to help because they live in another dimension.
Thank you.
Thank you.
But yet, we don't, our goal isn't to be dead ourselves. Our goal is to preserve ourselves. Our goal is to have a life that's possibly accepted. So, can you give me some things that we're starting to say? Things that fighting against death, or is it accepting that it's going to die, and that acceptance of its own death kind of gets off of it? You don't want to spend too much time kind of preserving something that's actually going to occur. There's something really dysfunctional about understanding this. Why can't the universe accept its own death and be happy?
I think that, in a sense, it's a very interesting, it's a conundrum, because maybe the universe does, should die. Maybe it should, in a sense.
Because Tamer was talking about, you know, that we need to increase ourselves in mushrooms, you know, get the knowledge over the next planet.
Well, in a sense, I think it's about investment. If the big problem for human beings is the spreading of universal love in human society, you know, we're either going to, you can look at our planet now, sort of, global warming, early warning issue, early warning system. And it's saying, you know what, think of this as the Earth. And if human beings started working together, we can forestall what might be a radical change in the atmosphere that really dooms us down to bacteria again. And we are facing the same issue that the universe is facing. We decide not to throw nukes at each other for the moment, but In a sense, maybe Earth is a tiny little microcosm of this bigger problem. And that if we solve this problem, then in the future, when we're in contact with other sentient beings, we'll have this competition versus this love, you know, cooperation, love, that we'll have to face that one too. So generation after generation, you reach the end stage, and all of the sentient beings have to work together. So maybe it's about investment, it's about commitment and investment. And the universe says, look, or nature says, if you're willing to go that far and make that investment to survive, you can survive. You're allowed to birth, you know, it's like 2001 Space Odyssey. We kind of made it just far enough to allow us one little star being to be born. Maybe that's the way that we can, we're not in such cheating deaths, we're earning the right to procreate a being at another gen, at another level. By as a whole,
in our highest states, we have a sense that even if we die, something of us are going to continue, right? In our highest moments, we say that if I die tomorrow, this experience of high consciousness is going to continue. And in the same way, the universe, we can create this universal high consciousness, even the physical death of the universe, that something survives the physical
death.
That's the baby that
had to solve that problem. And one can only imagine what's phase two, universe two, look like when it's all consciousness. That doesn't have to go back to solving. It's going to solve a bigger problem or a bigger challenge. It's going to go to a place we don't know.
Get back to the clarification before the thing that created the manipulation that created this universe. Back before that decision.
That's a good idea. It's like, where did the random quantum fluctuation come from? Can I make another one? Yeah. It would have the power to do that. It would say, I'm going to make another universe. With a different twist, and I'm going to create a society of larger beings.
And it's kind of like the whole concept of free will, that as our intentionality can shift the future. Nothing's predetermined, so the whole principle of free will is built into the fabric of the universe and recreating itself intentionally over and over again.
And in a sense, when you're on a trip, look at what happens to you. You're on a trip, and they talked about bad trips in the last talk. It's like, oh, this is a bad trip. What happens around you? All kinds of weird stuff that is now your new reality, that you're having a bad trip. The conscious decision you made to go into that place of fear creates snakes and demons, you know, all that stuff around you. You've created a reality around you, around by that bad trip. And in your daily life, if you kind of like, you kind of got out of the bed on the wrong side and whatever, and you're kind of carrying that crankiness through, everything shatters along your path. And the person at the drive-through window is now upset because you were kind of negative and it goes into the drive-thru restaurant. It's just a terrible thing. Whereas if you're in this kind of glowing, you know, Jesus or Buddha or these guys were like, never went there. It was like, they had that gaze every once in a while. They went into the desert. But
they were
so radiating that there was this ripple effect continually going off of them. There were people that were just moved. I mean, they were picked up almost bodily by this power to go out and do things. Maybe that was what the early apostles were. And then the church got hold of it and sort of went like this. But, you know, in your own life, and I think really when it comes down to what can I, if you ask the question, what can I do to be part of this bigger thing, I think it comes back to voice. If you use your voice, because we live in a ball of gas in our atmosphere, and this ball of gas seems to be the great medium, whether it be a little or ball of liquid, or our cetacean brethren, if you can create vibration, you can create a tremendous effect, either negative or positive. So by speaking, or by singing, as Galen does, or by speaking like I try to do this because I think the vibrations are going through the air, coming into your mind, are creating these pictures, and this is the greatest tool we have to being a part of the process. And the vibration is a loving vibration, and a little bit of a Terrence-like vibration with words, you know, ideas that create images. You're joining that process. You're communicating, and you're part of that process, whether it be for humanity, your family, or your town, or all of the earth, which a lot of you are trying to do, or you're tapping into the bigger thing, which is the universal process through voice.
I'm just thinking that inner voice, like the inner sound, it's that aspect of that. It's a little bit of a way of saying it, but that it's a voice that maybe it is spoken, but maybe not through the mouth. That our voices animate every aspect of our beings. So all our senses go through.
And you know, it's interesting. One of the world's great living physicists, John Wheeler, who was a contemporary of Dick Feynman and whatnot, he can do this now because he's in his 90s and he can kind of say what he wants. But he said, could it be that the universe exists to create observers to create the reality of the universe? Mm-hmm. And people, you know, because he's 90s, Nobel Prize already didn't listen. But the real fundamental thing is when you have an idea, a vision for something, to create something, and already things, and you have the intent behind it, the good intent, and actually even evil intent. It's all kind of the same. One of them's a destructive, one's a constructive, the other constructive. Well, Adolf Hitler had a lot of evil intent, and he created a huge amount of reality. Let's not skip over that. You can have intent. Intent is intent. But when you create that intent of a vision for something, like I'm coming to Burning Man, and I'm going to make a theme camp, whatever, you see it in your head, it's already kind of coming together, in a sense. Miraculous things happen, right? The right 2x4 shows up, and the right guy that can put the right nail into the right 2x4. Miraculous these things that don't seem to be, they're beyond explanation, and it's your power to influence the reality around you.
Which suggests that your intent is kind of telepathic voice to what it is that you intend, because it always seems at Burning Man that you show up, you've been seeing something, right, for however long, a day or 20 years, and suddenly you're surrounded by people who've all seen their part of the same thing, right? And so all of a sudden it's this explosion of co-creation, and when you do begin to give this voice to it, you start talking to them. Really, I've been thinking about interactive music theater in domes for 20 years, too. And then you go by next to you and says, my mission on the planet is to create domes where interactive theater can take place. And you're sleeping 10 feet from me? So that's nuts. But of course you are, because somehow this telepathy, which you're right, is given internal voice through co-intention. And then co-creation.
To build on what Gail said, think of what we're in right now. We're in a 270-degree arc with a hole on one end. And all these people are in this mind space. That's why I call it a universal mind state. It's pretty unique on the planet. I mean, normally you're in grid cities, isolated automobiles looking around. So you're in a unique opportunity, and you know what's going on, right? You know that weird things, serendipitous, wonderful things continually happen. But maybe in that future universe, or in a future planet of Earth, if we can create that kind of arc, why 270 degrees and why is it broken on the end? It's inclusive so that more can come in. You can have coming in and out of that arc. So perhaps at the very end of the universe, the societies that finally create that single consciousness, that single intent to create that being are going to be in an open arc. And you're going to see this band around this collapsing brilliant ball of matter and energy, but there's going to be an open end to it. And what happens when your embryo turns to a blast shell and turns to a being? It cups like this. The thing comes in and cups. The inside is your gut, the outside is your skin, and the outside of your body. Everything's like that. Even seeds, for example. So, in a sense, this is a metaphor. For some reason, whether it be the way Larry Harvey had the first burn in 86 or whatnot, we have created a structure here that mirrors the structure of the formation of the blastula, and it may mirror the structure that we have to create as a human society around our Earth to preserve it and ourselves. And it may mirror the structure, the cup, open circle that we have to, that will be created, or is being created right now as we speak, to serve out the universe. We're past the test.
As he said, there's a lot of positive and negative forces going on at the same time. And I mean, I look at the universe as extremely chaotic. And some people, like here at Burning Man, are really intent on doing good and helping everybody and building community. But I mean, there's a whole lot of other society out there that just doesn't give a shit, or does appear that way, and is kind of contributing to the randomness and the chaos of the universe. So, how do you?
In a sense, if you're a life form and you're a plant growing in a swamp, you're in a chaotic environment of other organisms tearing things apart and rotting. Water washing over, and you're trying to create a little bit of order so that your plantness can grow up and you can create more plants, the ability of more of your kind, more seeds, and more plants in chaos. In a sense, at Burning Man, maybe it's a temporary coming together of people in a kind of mental order space that is in this form. It's powerful enough that when you go back out into your lives in the chaotic world of corporate jobs and craziness that's out there, you can carry some of that ability to survive and maybe spread what was created here out there. And then maybe it takes generation after generation, but maybe this, in a sense, it's not a living being, it's a sort of psychosocial fight of the entropy that exists in the world. And then in 100 years, when we've got an atmosphere that's turning over and all kinds of bad climate and people running around, people who are involved in this experience or their children or their children's children will create the social psychic organization to survive the tumult in those coming times.
I think we already are. Yeah. Present, the future was the present.
Future.
We're doing it right now. Go outside.
And with that, thank you, Gail, too.